Give them one more round of applause. Come on. What do you even say to that? Have you ever met somebody like that? I mean, that's just people with that much joy. It's just a little bit creepy, I might add. You know, I just wanted to, we did that on purpose because we want to communicate. That's not how we're going to approach today's topic, okay? The don't worry, be happy syndrome, you know. Not every day is that way. And when we talk about having joy and making a choice and looking at it from God's perspective, you know, it's not as simple as that sometimes. It's a little bit more complex. It's hard to do. And you know what? It's interesting because when Jesus, you know, was on this earth, he was a lot of different things. And joy was really one of them, although none of us really think about it that way. None of us really, you know, see Jesus. Most pictures that we think of Jesus, we think of he's stern and he's calm and religious. You know, have you ever thought about this? Have you ever pictured Jesus in your mind sitting on a rock with his disciples there and he's kicked back and his head's thrown back and he has just a huge belly laugh? You know, it's like, do you think he ever did that? Do you think in his humanity there ever was a time in Scripture where he laughed? And of course, the answer that we're going to be looking at today is yes, it really is. But here's kind of where we want to start the day, okay? And that is this: joy is my responsibility. Joy is your responsibility. When I say it's your responsibility, it's personal, but it really is. It's our responsibility to choose joy. Nobody's going to give it to you. Nobody's going to magically just inject you with it. You can't find it in another person. Many people think that, you know, a different stage of life will give them joy. And you go through life and you try to look for seasons of happiness. And many people who are single in here, right, probably even almost half people in here are single. You think, hey, if I get married, then I'll be joyful. I'll find joy. And those of you who are married, some of you guys are like, don't do it. And then, some of you guys who are married and don't have kids, you're thinking, if once we have kids, we'll find joy, right? And then some of you who are married and have kids, you're thinking, you know, and they're teenagers. You're thinking, as soon as they leave, we'll have joy, you know? I mean, it's just, there's a thing where we always seem to find or look for joy in other people, or like maybe it's circumstantial around us. But quite honestly, it really is our responsibility. And that's what we're going to be looking at here today. But how do we find joy on bad days? Because after all, not every day is great. Let me tell you about one of the worst days I've ever had, very quickly, to tell you, kind of introduce the topic. It reminds me of, it was about 3 years ago, I just got hired at Kensington, and I was flying back to Atlanta to do a wedding from a former person from a former church, the church I came from, and he was in our college ministry, he was getting married. So I was late to the airport, I got there late, ran through, security chose to randomly, you know, just keep me there for 1,000 hours and check everything about me. I finally got to the gate, and it was delayed 2 hours. So I sat there for 2 hours, get on the plane, to which I sat there for another 45 minutes. And the gentleman next to me was extremely large, so large that I kind of measured it. His body was over the little handrest, like 4 inches toward me. And nice guy, but here I'm sitting here, really cramped. You know, the air's on. It's really claustrophobic. We get up in the air, and then it's the worst flight I've ever experienced in my life. The turbulence were so bad that I was getting thrown against this guy. Bam, bam. And it was so bad. And I thought to myself, not only do I not fly well, but I'm going to get sick. And I told that story 1 year ago this week, and I thought I'd reshare this. It's wonderful. So I thought to myself, the bag isn't going to cut it, right? And I've never gotten sick on a plane other than this time, okay? So I get up, and I run to the restroom, and it was so bad as I was, you know, those restrooms are like this big. I'm getting thrown up against the walls because it is boom, 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 because it's so bad, the turbulence. And I got sick, and it went everywhere. I mean, it was all over me, and I'm just thinking, oh, this is the worst. And so when you're sick, you know how like it is when you're sick, every moment is excruciating, we were supposed to land any second now. So every time the engine would power down, I was thinking, I was listening for the chirp, right? And then the captain gets on, and he goes, we're going to be circling around for another 30 minutes. And, you know, when you're sick, you're like, I don't care about my shoes. You just don't care. I mean, you don't care about anything except for just getting out of there. So another 30 minutes goes by, and the flight attendant, who is a guy, comes over and starts banging on the restroom door, and it's over the engine, so he's yelling, and he's screaming, and he's saying, sir, get out of the restroom. You have to take a seat. It's the law. We're landing. And I'm screaming back. I'm like, I'm sick. I'm sick. And I promise you this. If he banged on that restroom door one time, he banged on it 15 times in 5 minutes. Boom, 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 boom. Sir, he started screaming, right? And at this time, I've got my shirt off because it's not good. You know, my stomach was hurting, so I'd unbuttoned my pants, you know, because your stomach hurts and everything. It's everywhere. And so I said, I'm sick. And he goes, sir, that's why we have those bags right in front. And so I grabbed the door and I opened it up and I go, does this look like it's going to fit in a bag to you? And then I realized that we were in such close proximity and I had no shirt and my pants were down. And about 30 people looked right at me and I was like, oh my goodness. I'm sitting there and he has the door. And he goes, sir, you're going to have to get dressed and get, and he wasn't going to let go of the door. And I'm standing there, and I'm thinking, I've got no shirt on, my pants are down, I'm covered, and, you know, I'm thinking, what am I going to do? I didn't have any other choice. So I punched his fingers and closed the door and locked it. I didn't know what else to do, and then I thought, I'm in trouble. And he said, sir, and I said, he goes, you better sit down. I said, there's a seat in here. I'm going to sit down on this seat in here. Finally, he goes, fine, sit down. So I sat down, and I'm sitting in the seat, and finally, woo, it chirps, and it stops, right? I'm thinking to myself, okay, listen, I don't get embarrassed, right? I mean, I just don't. But I'm thinking to myself, I am so embarrassed that I will be the last Homo sapien off this plane. It lands, and God is my witness, I'm not making this up. The plane goes, woo, and the captain gets on and goes, excuse me, we're going to pull over on the side of the runway until the man in the back gets out of the bathroom and has a seat. I repeat, the man in the back has to get out of the bathroom and come take a seat now, or else we will sit here. And I'm like, and he didn't say it like that, but he did say that. And I'm standing, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I didn't know what to do. So I got up, I'm getting redressed, I'm trying to clean off, I got the water, the little stream, little drip, drip, and I'm covered in water, I'm getting back dressed, I smell horrible. And I was in row 16 of 64, so I open the door, and I do the walk, and every person's turning, and I'm like, how's it going? Yeah, hi, how you doing? And I walked over, and I snuck, and I sat down next to this guy, and the guy goes, oh. And he goes, dude, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm really not. And you know what? Here's the thing. If he would have said to me, don't worry, be happy, I'd have been like, no, it's not happening. Not happening, Captain, not on this day, because that's not a place where I can find joy. And so afterwards, they pulled me in, and they kind of warned me, and they said, we will throw you in airport jail next time. So, it's a bad thing to do. Don't ever do that on a plane. So, and I tell you that for this reason, not all days are easy. And so we're going to be looking at this topic because, after all, you know, how can we have joy or happiness? And what's the difference between the two, especially when times are tough? And so here's what we're going to be talking about today. You want to take out your program and write these thoughts down. There's three things that we need to realize that we're going to unpack. Here's the first one, that God is the most joyful being in the universe. And for some of you, that's new news today. Most of you would probably think to yourself, you know, God is the most holy being in the universe. He's the most righteous, but is he really truly the most joyful being in the universe? And for some of us, we may say, okay, that makes sense, but do we really truly believe that? If you want to write something down next to it, write, joy is at the heart of God. God is the source of everything. He says he is love. He says he is joy. All joy originates from God the Father. And sometimes we don't see God that way. We don't see him belly laughing with his disciples. We don't picture that maybe joy is a part of that. And Christians, probably more than anybody, and from my experience, and I'm saying this from my limited experience, have been the least joyful group of people to be around in my, you know, early on in my life growing up and getting into ministry and hanging around my denomination that was kind of full of rules and regulations and a legalistic environment. But God, if you were to see God right now, I believe honestly he would have a smile on his heart because he is the source of all joy. And he is the happiest being and the most joyful being in the universe. But a lot of times we don't picture God that way. You know what we think of? We think of him like, I call it the cop car syndrome. You're driving along and you're going about your business. Even if you're not speeding, tell me this isn't true. When you see a police car, what do? You immediately check what you're doing. Your temperature goes up. Your adrenaline goes up. You stop. Then it doesn't matter if you're speeding. You slow down and then you look and then here's what you do. You do the rear view mirror syndrome. You know what I'm talking about? Or the side mirror syndrome. And you watch to see his reaction. And so you're slowing down, you're going like this, and you're like, he's not moving, he's not moving, he's not moving. And then finally, when he's kind of out of the picture, what do? You speed back up, right? That's the way we view God. And for me, that's kind of how I viewed him. As a matter of fact, the most famous, one of the most famous Far Side cartoons is this one right here. That is a picture of God at his computer. That's the caption. And there's a guy walking underneath a piano, and the button he's about to hit says, "Smite." Okay? And it's like, here's the funny thing. Humor is supposed to relate to people. The reason why that's so funny, think about this. People believe that. The reason why it's funny, it identifies what a common belief is, and that is God is out to get me. God is going to punish me. I'll never forget when I actually started to learn that Christians can be happy, that Christians can have joy. I promise you, when I was kind of, you know, unlearning everything I had learned in this denomination where I came to know God in, I remember going to a Braves game in Atlanta where I lived for a dozen years or so. And I remember being there with a brand new guy. He was brand new to our church. He was not a Christian. He was just kind of checking things out. And I just invited him to a Braves game. I had free tickets. We were right behind the home plate. And so we were just hooping and hollering. We had these big jugs of sweet tea, and we were just yelling and screaming. And we were having such a good time that this group of college kids had left their seats and come down, sat next to us. And these two girls looked over and said, "Hey, what's in your glass?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, "Come on, man, what'd you spike the tea with?" And we were just blown away. And I said, "Sweet tea." She goes, "Give me that." And she took a sip of it. And she's like, "It really is." She's like, "I could have swore you guys were drunk." And I didn't want to say, she's like, "What are you drinking?" I didn't want to say, "I'm drinking on Jesus." You know, I didn't want to do that. But I did say, "Hey, man, we're just drinking in life," is kind of how I responded, right? Because I knew that was the right answer. And so we talked more and more. About 15 minutes into it, I said, "Well, you know why we're so happy, don't you?" She said, "Why?" I said, "Because we're Christians." And she was like, "What?" You know, it's almost like that isn't true. Christians, they don't dance or what do you? And so we started talking, and I remember them leaving, and it was just a great time. And I looked over at Sean, and Sean said to me, he goes, "You know, I didn't know you could be a Christian and have so much fun." And I thought in my mind, I didn't say it out loud, but I thought to myself, "You know what? Neither did I." And it was a great experience for him. And it was like a magnetic effect. It was like people saw it. It was like, man, how could they possibly be so happy? They're having a great time. And she was blown away that I wasn't using some liquid encouragement to get me there, right? I mean, she was blown. It was like a magnet. And that's how followers of Christ should be, because we're supposed to reflect his image. And if God is the source of joy and God is the most joyful being in all the universe, doesn't it make sense that we would reflect his joy? As a matter of fact, look at John chapter 17, verse number 13. Look what it says. Jesus is speaking, and he says, "I'm coming to you, but I say these things," referring to previous verses, "while I am still in the world, so that they may have the full measure of joy within them." There's a ton of verses, but let me just give you one more. John 15, two chapters earlier, he said this, "I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete." And Jesus refers back to the fact that he has the full measure of joy, and he is communicating these things, the message of the gospel, the message of hope. He's giving us truth, even hard truth, so that we may be a people filled with joy. And so many times as followers of Christ and as the church, we have done a very, very poor job in actually repelling people the other side of the magnet, because we are so stern, you know, and just as an image problem over the years and decades. And I think that God from heaven has to look down and say, "That's not at all what I'm like." And so we have to first realize that, you know, God is the most joyful being in the universe. Number two, here's the second thing. And that is, laughter does a body good. Did you know that medically, it's been proven that that laughter does actually physically heal the body? How many of you have seen the movie Patch Adams with Robin Williams? Raise your hand. Okay, that's the majority of us, right? Robin Williams plays a doctor who, he was a real doctor in real life, and he gives a speech and talks about how when you laugh, you burn 78 times more calories than you would if you were just in a resting state. Isn't that interesting? And he talks about how laughter actually helps heal, and there's major studies done on how laughter and humor heal the body physically. Dr. Fry from the University of Stanford said, "If you laugh for 10 minutes, it's like getting on a rowing machine for 20 minutes. So I would say this, sell the treadmill and buy Meet the Parents, right? Or buy, you know, Christmas Vacation or Tommy Boy or whatever, you know, and because it's proven that it physically helps us. Look what it says in Proverbs 17, verse 22. It says, a joyful heart that is good medicine. A joyful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones. You see, a cheerful heart brings good news and gives health to the bones. It helps us emotionally and physically. In fact, science has proven that laughter reduces the risk of cardiovascular disease. And one more, Dr. Francisco Contreras said this, one bout of anger will diminish the efficiency of your immune system for 6 hours, but one good laugh will increase the efficiency of your immune system for 24 hours. Isn't it interesting how not only does joy and laughter come from the source, you know, which is God, but God designed us for laughter being good physically, emotionally, and even spiritually to the soul. So it's obvious that laughter is his intention for us. He's given us the gift of laughter, guess what? To laugh. I read a story about a guy who, an older gentleman married to an elderly lady, and they went into the hospital to do some tests because they didn't know what was wrong, but he was seriously ill. And so they ran all these tests, and they finally pulled him into a separate room. And there was two doctors, and they looked at the family, and they asked the man, they said, listen, we need you to step outside. And matter of fact, you can go wait in the car if you want to, but we have to talk to your wife alone. So the man goes out to the car, and they look at his wife, and they said, ma'am, we can't lie to you. This is pretty serious. Your husband may die. As a matter of fact, we've come up with what we think might save him, but you have to do these three things kind of religiously. And if you do these three things, you might be able to save his life. And she says, oh, my, well, what are they? He says, well, the very first thing is you have to cook him three meals a day. He has to eat, and he has to be well-prepared. And so whenever he wants anything, you have to get it for him. Even if he wants a snack, you make it for him. And the second thing is rest. Rest is extremely important. Give him the TV remote control. Let him watch whatever he wants to watch. Just don't question it. Just let him rest. And she says, and the third thing is sex. She says, you have to, you know, just be willing once a day, sometimes twice a day if he wants. She says, whatever he needs, just give it to him physically in your romantic, you know. She says, if you do those things, it may save his life. She says, okay, doctor, I understand. So she goes out to the car, and he says, honey, what did the doctor say? And she said, honey, you're going to die. I read about that in the Detroit Free Press. There's a comedian that we always bail to, and we try to get another one, but we just can't get away from this guy. Many of you have seen Brian Regan. There's a two-minute clip of him talking about getting his phone turned on. Tell me if you can't relate to this. Just sit back for the next 2 minutes and enjoy this clip from Brian Regan.
We also had to get the phone turned on. I'm at my friend's house. I call the phone company. Can you turn on our telephone? Okay, it's going to be a problem. I figured. How? Why? It's just going to be a big nightmare. That's our policy. It's going to be a nightmare. Something about hell on earth. It's different than I thought. I didn't know how it worked, so I asked him, how does that work? Do we have to wait in our home for a few days for the phone people to come out? No, we do it differently now. We can just flip the switch from right here. Oh, great. Can you go ahead and flip it? We're going to flip it next Thursday. Can you flip it right now? We're going to flip it Thursday, late, or Friday, or sometime in November. Can you see it from where you're at? Can I come down and flip it? What do I know? I guess there's only one flip switcher and he has a lot to get to. I assume they're tiny. Maybe they're big giant switches and they're really hard to flip, you know? Man, he's never gonna get to my house. I wanna go down there and cheer him on. Go, switch flipper, go! Flip them switches! Flip them good, switch flipper! Get him right.
You know, it's really interesting. We've just spent the last 5 minutes or so laughing. And you know, I mean, doesn't it feel great? I mean, your body is healing itself. It's the way that God designed us, and things are happening to you physically and spiritually and emotionally. And it really, I mean, I can just go on. I just don't have time to read all the stats that I found about laughter, how we build up emotion and laughter is a harmless way to release it. And all these different things, how your abdominal works, and it's like getting an aerobic exercise. That's why many of us are exhausted after a big bout of laughter, because it's just great for the body. Well, those are the first two things to recognize. Number one, that God is the most joyful being in the universe. Number two, that laughter does a body good, okay? Those are great things to realize, how God designed us, where it comes from, kind of his intention, his design for our lives. But then it comes down to, so what? So what do we do with that? You know, now that I know those things, that I don't always recognize those things, then what? Now comes the hard part. And so we look at number three, and that is this. Number three is joy is a choice. It's not a feeling. It's not something you get from somebody else. It's our responsibility to choose joy, even in the valleys. And I'm not talking about laughing in the midst of a valley or a hard time. I mean, you can have a subdued joy where you may not, some of you guys right now are going through a hard time. You're like, "What? Should I laugh right now?" No, that's all I'm talking about. But there needs to be joy deep down in there. And I'm not talking about laughing, but you know what? Maybe not now, but maybe later on. Because there's a difference between happiness and joy. And in the scriptures, sometimes they're translated as the same word. But as I was looking up all the different Greek words, I noticed a pattern in the New Testament. And that is, every single time Paul talked about this same Greek word that comes from joy, he always translated it into the word joy whenever it talked about a hardship. The word happy was used other places in the New Testament. But whenever it talked about, you know, going through a hard time, he always bailed to the word joy. So there's an indication that maybe happiness is kind of circumstantial, that happiness can come and go, but yet joy is always there. Almost like an ocean, you know, through the ups and downs of life, the undercurrent is always joy. And so it stands the reason that joy is something to be seen and to choose. I've been to the bush in Africa. I went to Kenya, Africa last year. I've been to Costa Rica and Lucarpio and different cities called Coat, and I've run into so many different families and kids especially who literally had nothing. And when I mean nothing, I don't mean little. I literally mean nothing. Like if I were to throw you outside with a bed sheet, you know, and say, pick up that stone and that bed sheet would be all you owned. I mean, these are the families that I've seen and the people that I've talked to. And these people know Jesus and they're really, really happy. And as you're sitting there, you can't believe that they're so joyful. And you're thinking to yourself, I can't even believe it, because you're like, oh man, that's so horrible. And I'm thinking to myself, they don't get it. Why do they need to be happy? They don't have anything. But here's the deal. I think that we don't get it. I think that our joy is translated into happiness and it's attached to stuff. But it's not that way, is it? Because joy is a choice. And when we say choose joy, we're not saying try harder. What we're saying is choose Jesus, because Jesus and God in the Trinity are the source of true joy. Look what it says in Philippians chapter 4, verse number 4. Paul is writing this and he says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice." And rejoice comes from the root word joy, to celebrate that joy which is within. And in the Greek, whenever you wanted to emphasize something, you would say it twice. So Paul is shouting this and he's saying, "Rejoice in the Lord always. And again I say rejoice." Trivia question: does anybody know where Paul was when he wrote this? He was in prison, and this wasn't the time in prison where he got released miraculously. 2 years ago, he was in prison, the same exact prison, and he was with Silas, and God sent an earthquake and released him miraculously. This is 2 years later. He's in the same prison. 6 months, 7 months, 8 months goes by, no earthquake, no releasing, and he's there in prison, condemned for being a pastor and a preacher of the gospel. And he writes a letter to the church of Philippi, and he says, "Rejoice." And what's really interesting is that he says, "Rejoice in the Lord." He doesn't say, just rejoice, don't worry, be happy. He says, rejoice in the fact that God is God, that God is faithful, even though he may not deliver me from prison. There may or may not be an earthquake coming, but rejoice in the Lord. And again, I say rejoice, because that's my choice. And I could choose something else, and I'm telling you right now, I may not be laughing now. Laughter may come later. But the joy that I find, the undercurrent of knowing that God is joy. Well, let me ask you this question. That's pretty hard to do, but you know, if God is the source of joy, where does God get his joy from? Well, again, there's so many verses. I only had time to choose one, but I think it's the best one. What can summarize what motivates Jesus to have joy? Well, in many scriptures it's true, but in Hebrews 12:2, look what it says. Let us fix our eyes. This is, again, the writer of Hebrews is saying, let us fix our eyes on Jesus. He's writing to the church. The author and the perfecter of our faith, and then he says, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Here's what he was saying. Jesus Christ, in all eternity past, was never separated from God the Father, which we cannot understand. And then he left God the Father. And the heart of the gospel is this. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And Jesus came to the earth, lived a sinless life, and died on a cross. So here's what Hebrews says. Matter of fact, bring that up again, would you please? Hebrews 12:2, it says, let us look to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross. Do you know what the joy set before him was? Because the end of the verse says, it talks at the end of the verse of him rejoining the Father, sitting at the right hand of the Father. He left eternity, came, and the only thing he went back with, different than when he came, was us. He towed us with him, and he redeemed all of the human race. He came for you, and he came for me. And the Bible says in Hebrews, as he endured the cross, his motivation of the joy was leaving and then coming back to God the Father and saying, I have redeemed those in which I am in love with. Because Jesus is intrinsically relational, and the Godhead is relational, and he designed us to be relational. Did you know that most studies review that laughter in 80% of its context is not after jokes, but 80% of its context is in greeting, saying hi and saying goodbye, and in conversation with one another. Because God created us to be relational. And so Jesus came down to restore that relationship. And that's his motivation of joy. So when Paul says rejoice in the Lord always, he's speaking of the fact that we need to choose joy that is found in Jesus. And we need to remember that even when life gets hectic. And so that's when it's hard. Let me read for you real quick a story that I read in a book called The Life That You Always Wanted by John Ortberg. He's a pastor in California. And he tells a story in this book about how he was washing his kids, you know, bathing his toddlers before, you know, kind of tucking them into bed. I'm going to read for you this 1-minute excerpt of this book where he talks about drying off his daughter Mallory. Listen to this. I'm trying to get Mallory dried off, and she's out of the water, and she's doing what has come to known in our house as the dee-da-day dance. This consists of her running around in circles, singing over and over again, dee-da-day, dee-da-day. It's a relatively simple dance expressing great joy when she is too happy to hold it in any longer. On this particular occasion, I was irritated. Mallory, hurry, I said. So she began to run in circles faster and faster, shouting dee-da-day rapidly. I said, no, Mallory, that's not what I mean. Stop the dee-da-day stuff and get over here so I can dry you off. Hurry. Now, let me just pause there. Have you ever been there, parents? Okay? I've got 3 kids. I promise you, that's a daily routine for me. I'm like, hurry, hurry, hurry. Then she asked a profound question. She looked at her dad and said, why? John says, I had no answer. I had nowhere to go, nothing to do, no meeting to attend, no sermons to write. I was just used to being in a hurry, so preoccupied with my own little agenda. So trapped in this rut of moving from one task to another, and then right in front of me was life, was joy. Here was an invitation to dance right in front of me, and I was missing it. When I hear that, I think to myself, how many times have I missed it? I can remember times where I don't miss it. I say to myself, stop, enjoy the moment. But how many times do I miss it? And so it says that John got up, and he danced with Mallory, and they danced the dee-da-day dance together. And she said I was pretty good at it, too, for a man of my age. And you know what? If we watch children, we see that they know how to laugh. In those YouTube clips you saw, children know how to laugh. Did you know the average 4-year-old laughs about 500 times a day, and the average 40-year-old laughs 15 times a day? What's happened to us? The reason why, we grew up to be adults, and it's like we don't realize that God created us for joy. It's great to be happy, but we're just getting too busy with life. So part of the choose joy is realizing where it comes from, but another part of it is just to have perspective and know who God is and what he invites us to. and that we need to stop and pause and recognize that God has given us every opportunity to be joyful in life. When we were planning this service, and I'm going to close with this, we were talking around the table and saying, what do we want to talk about? And Dave Wilson, one of our teaching pastors, shared a story. He said, it was the most amazing thing I've ever experienced in a long time as far as the community is concerned. He flew out to Marco Island to do a wedding for Rob Cutron. He's a singer here at Kensington. You may or may not know him. Which, by the way, can I just pause and say, if anybody from the Clinton Township campus wants to get married at Marco Island, I will be very glad to volunteer for that wedding, okay? But he flew out to Marco Island, and so he and his wife and the newlywed couple were going to go to the beach and to watch the sunset. And so they went out to the beach, and he said that almost like at once there were hundreds of people came and they sat down in silence for 15 or 20 minutes and watched the sunset. And he was talking to a gentleman who lived in the community, and the guy says, oh, yeah. He goes, we do this every single night. All of us come out here, and we just look and realize this creation that God has given us every day, and we don't want to take it for granted. And so they sat there for 20 minutes as the sun went down into the water, and then guess what? They stood up, and he said, it just shocked me. They all stood up, and the sun was finally out of view, and they gave God a standing ovation and cheered and hooped and hollered, and then just turned around and walked off. They gave God a standing ovation for his creation of every day. And I think to myself, I mean, as soon as I heard that, I was around the table and I went, I can't believe it. That is awesome. Because how many times do I go out and, you know, watch the sunset? Of course, in Michigan, it's pretty much not possible. But but God gives us a sun every day. And you know what? The sun comes up and I want to give us all a challenge. And it's the same thing I thought in that room. And I thought to myself, every time I see the sun, that's the constant in my life. I'm going to try really hard to remember that God made that sun come up. And with that sun and with that new day is a new opportunity to choose joy, to recognize God for who he is, even in the hard times of life, to realize where it comes from, what's the motivation, and you know what? Every single time the sun goes down, to recognize that God is faithful and that God is beautiful and that he is awesome in his creation. And guess what? When it goes down, that means that it's coming up again. Because that's what God does. And his faithfulness never ends. And he's faithful when we're not. And when we blow it, guess what? He is still faithful. And if you've walked away from him, guess what? He invites you back to that love relationship. No matter what you've done, guess what? God loves you. He is joy. He wants us to choose joy. Because that's at the heart of God. And so here's what we're going to do. We're going to end our service a little differently. We're actually going to take the last 10 minutes to celebrate joy. And Danny Cox is going to come out with the band, and they're going to sing some songs. And so we're going to invite you, if you want to sing along, to sing along. And so as they're coming out and as they're doing that, we're also going to take just a minute to receive our offering. As our ushers come forward, let me just remind you that if you're here for the very first time, you can let this pass. You can give if you really want to, but you don't have to. But as you're kind of taking care of that, don't lose the moment of recognizing who God is and what his purposes are for our life. So listen to the words and maybe even join in to these words.